Kodak was once a $30 billion company that dominated 90% of the camera market. But after plundering digital cameras, they slowly bled market share and money, eventually filing for bankruptcy in 2013. For most, that would be the end of the story, but not for Kodak. 11 years later, Kodak is not just alive, but their revenue is soaring over a billion. Here's how they did it.
Eastman Kodak, a pioneer in photography for more than a century, has declared bankruptcy.
Eastman Kodak's bankruptcy was a long, painful process. In total, their bankruptcy took 19 months because a lot needed to change. One thing was clear, Kodak needed to move away from cameras. They failed to adapt and it was too late. They needed to go through massive restructuring, but that's not all. Kodak had a lot of financials to sort out. Their liabilities were $6.75 billion. Their bankruptcy process was able to eliminate $4.1 billion of this, but they still had over $2.5 billion left over, which is still a lot of debt. Initially, they tried to sell off their digital patent portfolio. They hoped this would provide them with $2 billion, but the actual figure was $527 million. Much of the debt was owed to UK Kodak Pension Plan. It's a bit complex, but imagine this is a different entity which represents Kodak's pension obligations, specifically $2.8 billion. It's no wonder why modern companies have moved away from pensions. Kodak obviously didn't have the money, but they did have some remaining assets. They sold their imaging and document units to Kodak Pension Plan for $650 million. It was much less than the claim, but luckily they agreed to settle. On top of this, there was still a lot of outstanding claims, but Kodak agreed to pay these out after exiting bankruptcy. This included an $895 million financing package with JPMorgan Chase & Co., among quite a few others. Many creditors only received a few cents back for every dollar, so there's no question that a lot of people lost a lot of money. But still, they had to be hopeful. They were banking on Kodak surviving and becoming profitable, but would this be enough to exit bankruptcy? All of this was overseen by a federal bankruptcy judge. The plan was supported by most of Kodak's creditors, but there were still quite a few objections from shareholders and more. Through these efforts and many more, Kodak and its creditors submitted a final plan. And on August 23rd, 2013, the judge dismissed the objections and approved Kodak to exit bankruptcy. He stated that, "This comes on a day when many are losing retirement benefits, and many are finding that their recovery as a creditor is just a minute fraction of what their debt is. But I cannot decree a larger payment for creditors or any payment for shareholders if the value is not there." Kodak's lawyer also said that Kodak will be a very different company than the one in the popular imagination, and a very different one than the one that filed for bankruptcy. But without cameras, what would Kodak do? How would they make money and pay off their debt? They were emerging into new waters, and one thing they desperately needed was a good leader. On March 12, 2014, Kodak appointed a new CEO, Jeffrey J. Clark. Clark had a diverse background before Kodak, including leadership positions in HP, Travelport, and Orbitz. But most of all, he had experience in change, leading companies through turbulent, uncertain times. After being appointed CEO of Kodak, he had two immediate priorities, and the first was a bit surprising. Clark had a deep respect for the staff at Kodak, and his first action reflected that.
"This culture was incredibly successful for a century. And many of the people who are there are 30, 40, and even longer employees, who when they were hired, they were going to the Google or the Apple of that day. So these were the premier people hired out of universities, and some of the best PhDs in the world still work at the company, as do many, many of our employees."
Clark was going to make a lot of changes, so he asked the people with the most knowledge for advice. "My first priority is to spend my time listening to Kodak's employees, customers, partners, and other stakeholders as part of a detailed evaluation of our operations, market opportunities, and approach for success." He wanted input from staff, To him, they were the experts that had been there for decades. This was important because it coincided with this next priority. Kodak had failed because it didn't keep up with the market. They invented digital photography, but were too slow to capitalize on it. Clark wasn't about to let that happen again. So his second key priority was a focus on innovation at a pace. Clark began implementing what he'd learned from past experience, and part of that was enabling employees. Despite going bankrupt, Kodak was still massive and bloated. There was plenty of bureaucracy and red tape. Clark cut through this, making it easy for employees and managers to innovate and share ideas. He brought the Silicon Valley mentality of failing fast, which can come with problems, but it's what Kodak needed. We have gone from a company that once had more than 100,000 employees to about 8,000 employees worldwide. As a smaller company, we have a bias for speed and agility that a company with 100,000 people often does not have, and that is a competitive advantage. We have an incredible patent portfolio and an engine that is creating more. All of these cultural changes were great, but they didn't matter if their strategy was no good. Kodak needed a strong focus if they wanted to survive. So, what did they do?
First of all, I believe that analog is still important. Mm-hmm. It is a very small part of our business, but film is still the Kodak heritage, $200 million of revenue a year, and profitable. And I think there's an analog renaissance that's happening. I believe there's some digital fatigue, and things like the vinyl revolution, what's happening with film now and major motion picture, some new Super 8 products, as well as the maker movement around the world, is really things that people are starting to embrace.
Clark was paying attention to customer behavior and how it was changing. He expected it to be an area of future growth for Kodak, but the fact of the matter was their cameras would never be as dominant as they used to be. Even with a potential resurgence, this would be a small niche. Kodak's cameras had failed spectacularly, but they still had some potential. Clark predicted future growth for their traditional cameras, but their business still needed a new foundation. And a part of the opportunity came from their cameras. Before Clark joined, a small part of Kodak's team was hard at work building something new. Amidst bankruptcy, they didn't have heaps of capital, but they did have some assets, namely their steam inkjet technology. Since they specialized in film cameras, their ink and printing technology was excellent. They also had many patents related to imaging. But there was one problem. For consumers, there wasn't a huge demand for these technologies or services, but there was elsewhere. There was a major opportunity in commercial printing. Kodak had the experience and technology in image processing. Not only that, they were already dipping their toes into this industry but hadn't fully committed, so they got to work. With a nimbler, faster Kodak, they restructured to focus entirely on printing, specifically digital printing for large businesses. They focused on packaging slips, commercial printing, and basically anyone that needed the highest quality and in mass. On February 11th, 2013, while still navigating bankruptcy, Kodak unveiled their latest creation, the Prosper 5000 XLI press printer. It was a massive industrial machine that could print 650 feet per minute or up to 90 million A4 pages every month. It could measure performance and make real-time adjustments, meaning printing it never needed to stop. It clearly had quantity, but it also had higher quality. It used newly formulated nanoparticulate pigment inks, offering a color range 30% wider than offset printing. The Prosper 5000 XLI was the best of the best. It had the fastest, most accurate writing engine on the market. But Kodak didn't just want to enter the industry. They wanted to dominate it, reclaiming a part of their former glory. But the question is, was this enough for Kodak to rebound? The 5000 XLI was a huge leap forward, but it wasn't enough on its own. Coming out of bankruptcy, Kodak was still unprofitable, but they had momentum. Not only that, with Clark's leadership and focus on innovation, they were in the perfect position to thrive, so they kept going. They went all in on commercial printing. In June 2014, they released the Prosper 6000, which was a massive leap forward in a very short amount of time. This could print 1,000 feet per minute, which was about 50% more than the 5,000 XLI. Not only that, it had better drying capabilities and even better nanoparticulate pigment inks, giving businesses even wider colors. It offered all of this and was still cheap, at less than half a cent per color A4 page. They were solving a huge need better than anyone, and they did this further by offering multiple models. For example, the 6000C for commercial printing and the 6000P for newspapers or publishing. Have you noticed a quality upgrade on the channel over the past few months? One of the biggest changes we've made is minimizing the stock footage within videos. We've been leaning into using motion graphics, 3D effects, and custom AI footage, which brings me to the sponsor of today's video, NVIDIA AI. NVIDIA AI is already the leading AI video creation platform with over 25 million users worldwide. But their new update, V3, is about to take things to the next level. Think DALL-E, but for video. OpenAI has been teasing such a product, Sora, for several months, but there's still no launch in sight. NVIDIA AI V3, on the other hand, is coming out in just a few weeks, and V3 will come with full generative capabilities, meaning you can create anything you want from scratch. Want a video of a diver exploring the Mariana Trench and finding massive structures and deep-sea creatures? Done. Want to clone your voice for the narration? Simply enter "use my voice" in the command box and done. Welcome to the world of endless possibilities. You bring the idea and NVIDIA puts you in the director's seat to bring it to life with simple text prompts. If you haven't checked out NVIDIA AI's current version already, go check it out right now, even just to mess around for free, with paid plans starting at just $20 per month. Just go to my link in the description and use my code to get 2x the number of video generation credits in your first month. Thank you to NVIDIA for sponsoring this video. Kodak was now moving at full speed. They hit the mark in the printing industry, and it was paying off. After emerging from bankruptcy in 2013, still carrying debt, they recorded their first annual profit in 2016. Just 3 years later. It was unbelievable. Kodak had turned things around spectacularly and quickly. And this was just the beginning. Staff continued to innovate and develop printing solutions. In 2022, they announced the Prosper 7000, which was the world's fastest digital press, printing at speeds up to 1,345 feet per minute, more than double the 5000 XLI. Their printing division was a massive success. Yet simultaneously, another area was slowly growing. Over the years, there was a strong, devoted group of customers who loved shooting film. A niche, but a growing niche. It turns out that enthusiasts from younger generations wanted to shoot on film. They found it more authentic and personal than digital. Analog offered a unique experience when it came to shooting photography. Film photography was somehow making a comeback, and it's still growing. Clark's prediction from many years ago was completely accurate, and not just amongst hobbyists, but professionals too.
And I could get that shot and fire off 10 on a medium format roll using Kodak Gold because I knew I wanted it to be warm, and then you get a scan back from the lab and it looks like this. No editing. That's not run through Lightroom, that is straight from the lab. That is, in and of itself, the magic of film photography. And
this extended to the film industry. Many high-profile directors swore by Kodak for the quality and texture it brought. For example, Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer, which won 7 Academy Awards, was shot on Kodak 65mm film. In fact, Kodak engineered special 65mm film for black and white sequences in Oppenheimer. And it's not just Nolan. Other directors, including Quentin Tarantino and Steven Spielberg, also commonly use Kodak. By this point, though, Clark had stepped down from his position. Not because of any scandal or conflict, but because he had turned Kodak around, and now that it was thriving, he was no longer needed. In 2023, Kodak reported revenue of $1.1 billion, with a net income of $75 million, $49 million more than the previous year. Obviously nowhere near as large as they used to be, but still an insane recovery. They are a very different company today, but some parts of them are still the same. They have a deep focus on innovation and research, and the core parts of their business like printing are still there. They just needed the right leadership and strategy. Many people talk about how Kodak failed, but few mention how they bounced back. Their experience is awfully similar to that of Nokia, who failed to capitalize on smartphones, but after losing everything, are in a totally different market, thriving. One that's quite surprising. If you want to watch that story, click on this video. But until then, I'm Hari, and I'll see you guys on the next one.